It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Zone of Influence is a special series on hydraulic fracturing and state politics, looking at the influence money is having on Pennsylvania's oversight of the natural gas boom. The series is being reported by Allegheny Front reporter Reed Frazier and WESA Morning Edition host Josh Rollerson. They join me in Studio A. Gentlemen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us about the series airing on WESA and the Allegheny Front and what your investigation is looking into. We'll start with you, Reed.
Yeah, we wanted to look at how the state is regulating natural gas and what are some of the pressures and influences. There's been this notion floating around Pennsylvania for a few years now that the gas industry has a heavy influence on how the state oversees it, and that influence is seen by campaign donations and lobbyists in the Capitol. And we wanted to kind of interrogate that. So we looked at the calendars of several state officials and kind of narrowed in on a couple to see who they were meeting with at key times in the last few years.
And, you know, it's notoriously difficult to try to associate causation with these kinds of relationships. But we think a correlation can be telling about the relationship between these economic forces and these policymakers by spending some time trying to understand simply how much contact they have with one another. We can get a better handle and some empirical basis to evaluate these claims that are thrown around rather liberally about influence on politics.
Well, and you talk about the pressure that would come from lobbyists, but is there a pressure that is brought to bear by fracking being an industry that has turned a great deal of profit and that has created a base of economic revenue that goes into various things that the state is looking to fund, that if you turn that off, you are suddenly faced with some difficulties and you might have some fingers pointing at you as to why did you do this?
Absolutely. And there is a kind of pressure that politician can face and probably should face by an industry that's creating jobs. And the gas industry is created, by independent estimates, tens of thousands of jobs, a lot of money in terms of royalties in certain parts of the state. And so there is absolutely pressure, especially in those parts of the state where drilling is heaviest. But we also wanted to just open up the hood of the state government a little bit and see what's going on at key times, or try to make out as best we can who they're meeting with. And we found that the gas industry spent a lot of money on lobbying in the last few years, and that at key times, they've been able to send a big team to Harrisburg to get their message across and let legislators know where they stand on the issues. And we can't really say for sure how much influence that's had, but it's certainly just a key data point to just note out for the public.
Josh, what do we know about what the lobbyists are allowed to do? When they put pressure or when they try to influence legislators, what is in bounds and what is out of bounds as far as what the lobbyists do?
I couldn't really speak to what the law says about those kinds of interactions, but it's my impression that a lot of this happens at a really informal level. These are just relationships that exist sort of inside the office and outside the office. These are people that work with one another on a daily basis, see each other around the halls of the Capitol. A lot of the contacts they have are very informal. So, and that's one reason they can be kind of hard to track. That's one of the things I found in the analysis I did of one of these officials' appointment calendars. And we can talk about that later. But it's important maybe at this point to note that these are valuable relationships in a lot of ways for making policy. And that's something that you'll hear from people from both parties on various sides of these issues. And it goes for people from environmental groups as well as people representing the industry, that they rely on these relationships with lawmakers and policymakers, and vice versa. People that are making the policies need information that sometimes only lobbyists, or sometimes lobbyists are best positioned to provide. So I want to emphasize that too.
And a lot of times the lobbyists are people that worked in the legislature, or state senators or state representatives themselves. So those relationships go back a lot farther than just the lobbying efforts.
Absolutely. And as one legislator put it to me, anybody can lobby. You, me, our friends, our family, we can drive to Harrisburg, walk into the state capitol and lobby and say, we want this XYZ changed in this bill. The reason why professional lobbyists get the money that they do is because a lot of them used to work inside that building, either as an elected official or as a staffer for one of these legislators on a committee, or they worked in some fashion with the state government. So they know these people. They know all the unwritten rules. and they're kind of good at navigating the system. A former oil and gas lobbyist told me that he sees himself as kind of a Sherpa leading a client, industry, or a company through a maze of committees and offices and just the sort of labyrinthine way laws get made. Or maybe the sausage gets made in Harrisburg, they're experts at it. And so that's why they get paid the big bucks, so to speak.
And it's kind of interesting to note when you hear so much about the revolving door, people that used to work in the industry now work in state government and vice versa. We found that there's a similar thing happening in the sort of post-government afterlife of some government officials who go on to work for environmental groups. So they're involved in advocacy on both sides of it, which further complicates our efforts to get people to talk about the records that we've been looking at.
We're talking with Morning Edition host Josh Rollerson and Allegheny Front reporter Reed Frazier about their series Zone of Influence, a special series looking at hydraulic fracturing and state politics and the influence money is having on Pennsylvania's oversight of the natural gas boom. Here on Essential Pittsburgh, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Lobbyists and lobbying is sometimes perceived as something akin to selling used cars. Based on your reporting, is that a fair portrayal, Reed?
Probably a little bit inaccurate. I mean, I didn't find any of them in the halls of Harrisburg sort of twirling their mustaches, if that's what you mean. You know, lobbying at this point in our political process holds a valuable part of the political ecosystem. Legislators have to vote on bills that are very detailed, hundreds of pages in length sometimes, about fairly arcane subjects. And they're not experts in oil and gas law or environmental science or public health or economics. And they basically, they lean on lobbyists from the various viewpoints to give them their best argument why a law should be one way or another. So, you know, I think the counter argument to that is, you know, if you don't or your constituency doesn't have enough money to send somebody to Harrisburg, then you're not getting your voice heard by your legislator and you're not able to hire somebody who knows the system and can really get that message across. Of course, there's other ways to get your message across. You can call your legislator and tell them what you think. And I'm told that that holds a lot of weight. But I think that there's a reason people hire lobbyists to get their message through.
Well, the perception of being akin to a used car salesman is, I think, probably more apt when talking about the public perception. Right? I think that's what someone told you.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was that was from a lobbyist himself. He said, you know, we're somewhere south of used car salesmen and somewhere around the approval rating of Congress or something like that.
And who seems to be gaining the upper hand? And maybe this is something that you haven't been able to ascertain during the course of your investigation and your reporting, but is it the pro-environmental lobby or is it the pro-fracking business lobby that is getting more of its way and its share of influence with the legislature?
I mean, certainly both sides will tell you that, well, the other guy is getting the better deal of it.
And why is that? Why do they do that?
I think they can probably point to either side can point to things that they didn't get in, for instance, Act 13, the big Marcellus Shale law. You know, Pennsylvania remains the only state without a severance tax on natural gas that comes out of the ground. It passed an impact fee, which has generated hundreds of millions of dollars for the state, but not as much as a severance tax would have. On the flip side, you know, gas drillers have higher fines they must face if they break the rules for fracking. They have higher bond payments, and they didn't want to pay that impact fee to begin with. So I think it's hard for me to judge or say for sure who's winning in the state, but I think people, you lay out the facts and people might come to their own conclusions about that.
Josh, what was the biggest challenge you encountered in reporting for this series?
Well, the single biggest difficulty I had was in getting sources to comment and provide context on the data that I was coming up with. And I eventually succeeded in getting an interview with Richard Allen, who was the former Secretary of Conservation and Natural Resources, after a couple of attempts to get a hold of him for an interview. He wouldn't agree to be recorded for use in the story, but I did talk with him at length about what was in his calendars. And as you can imagine, part of the difficulty is simply these were appointments that happened or didn't happen. happen a couple of years ago. So it was an exercise in recall, I suppose. And the difficulty of saying what this meeting or that meeting was about, that's difficult. There were other people I spoke to informally off the record about their impressions of how Secretary Allen did business and what actually happened in those contacts. And there are a lot of interesting facts that I was told, but they didn't all make it into the story for various reasons. You know, you find people that are reluctant, especially people that have served in government previously and have gone on to do other things for various reasons, including the fact that they, as I alluded to earlier, some of them now work, you know, in the lobbying end of things or in advocacy with state government. So they are reluctant to, jeopardize those relationships by sort of telling tales out of class. So there's more that we discovered in this process than we felt that we could go on the record and report. But it was difficult getting people to talk.
And it sounds, Reed, as though it is just difficult to keep track of all that is happening behind the scenes in this matter of influencing legislators one way or another when it comes to fracking.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a quick for instance. The one official I looked at in detail was Patrick Henderson, who's the energy executive for Pennsylvania. And in the year leading up to Act 13, he had 130 meetings with different oil and gas lobbyists or executives or members of trade groups that were kind of pushing a pro-gas agenda. And that is his job. But we wanted to know, as reporters, we want to know, what did you guys talk about in this meeting or that meeting? And there's, you know, A, he wouldn't talk to me on the record about it. But B, even if he could, it's sort of like, you know, there were lots of meetings with lots of people. And it's just hard to actually recall what one meeting was about or another.
So what kind of records are there? Obviously, a stenographer doesn't sit there and keep track of it. But who does? And how is it tracked?
Well, I mean, I think the record is the law that was written and the many drafts that came out of it. By design, these are behind closed doors meetings where people suss out what they like about a bill and what they don't like and what they want to see put in. And, you know, these are all forwarded around to the various committees that are working on it. And through the sort of magic of Harrisburg, things wind up in bills and they get debated and discussed. And so that, I think that is our record.
There are other interesting ways in which what we see in these data line up with the chronology of other things that were reported publicly as they were happening. One of the details that's in the story that I put together that will air tomorrow on Morning Edition, that's part of the piece that we'll have on the Allegheny Front this weekend, has to do with comments that Secretary Allen made in a couple of legislative hearings, including one under oath, sworn testimony, wherein he was asked to share anything he might know about discussions regarding lifting the moratorium on parks and forests, which, as you know, Governor Corbett is doing now. 2 years ago, he was asked by lawmakers, you know, is this happening? Do you know anything about this? And he said pretty unequivocally in both cases, no, we're not discussing it. Again, the record is ambivalent, and taking into account everything I said about the difficulty of interpreting those things, the record, I think, you know, casts some question on those assertions, but people can go and look at the records that we've posted as part of our article. A lot of notes, a lot of highlights, so you can go and see what he said in these committee hearings and then juxtapose that with what's on his calendar for the weeks leading up to it and draw your own conclusions.
Zone of Influence airs this week during WESA's Morning Edition and Saturday morning on the Allegheny Front. The reporters for the series, Reed Frazier and Josh Rollerson, have been our guests. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Coming up, a look at the business of physical therapy. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.